From Cherokee to Currituck, from the largest city to the smallest town, and from the state house to the schoolhouse, it's Carolina Journal Radio, your weekly news magazine discussing North Carolina's most important public policy events and issues.
Welcome to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. During the next hour, Donna Martinez and I will explore some major issues affecting our state. 2020 is stacking up to be a major election year in North Carolina. One of the state's leading political observers previews the year ahead. The ranking member of the U.S. House's Education Committee is North Carolina's Virginia Fox. You'll learn why she thinks her Democratic colleagues are focusing on the wrong issues. You've probably heard about the Game of Thrones, but how about the Game of Worms? We'll discuss the long-term impact of an agreement 900 years ago. But before we tackle each of these topics, there's a change taking place in the John Locke Foundation. Donna Martinez tells us all about it in the Carolina Journal headline.
With the new year underway here at the John Locke Foundation, we are actually beginning our fourth decade of service to North Carolina with a new CEO. Amy Cook is one of only four people who have ever held the CEO position since the John Locke Foundation actually opened its doors in 1990. Today, I am delighted to share with you and introduce you to Amy Cook. Amy, welcome to North Carolina. Welcome to the John Locke Foundation.
Thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me here today.
Okay, so it seems that you brought the cold with you from Colorado, where you are coming from. What gives with that?
Right. Everybody kept telling me North Carolina was warm.
And I have, July, August, just wait.
I have yet to find that. I think I was watching the news. I think it was yesterday, and they said that, was it Sunday, was the coldest day since November? I think I was here in November when you guys had your last coldest day, and I had my husband with me, and both times he keeps saying, he goes, I'm not believing that North Carolina's actually warm.
Okay, so you brought the weather from Colorado with you. Apparently, you were not able to bring your beloved Colorado Rockies, however, to North Carolina. You're a big-time baseball fan.
I am. Actually, I learned to love baseball, and I should add to this radio as well, growing up as a kid in St. Louis. So I'm a little used to heat and humidity and, of course, baseball. But I learned to love baseball by sitting in my backyard with my mom, who went to every single World Series game in 1944 when it was the Browns versus the Cardinals.
Oh, my word.
She watched the Cardinals win that series. So she watched every single game. But I learned to love baseball and radio both by sitting in the backyard with my mom listening to Cardinals games being called on radio. So I learned that that's where I came to love both.
Well, you were going to love North Carolina in terms of your affinity for sports. We've got a couple of really cool minor league baseball teams here. And we also, of course, have all sorts of other sports. And you're going to have to choose a driver in NASCAR. You're going to have to choose a college football and basketball team as well. So you got a fun time
coming.
Somebody
told me I have to find an ACC team.
So
just so everybody knows, my background from Missouri was Big 8, Big 12, SEC. And what I've heard is don't even say SEC.
That's right. That's right. That's fighting words here in North Carolina. So Colorado, obviously a wonderful state. It's beautiful. Everyone wants to live in Colorado, just like everybody wants to live in North Carolina. So why did you make the change and come here to the John Locke Foundation?
Well, who wouldn't want to be here?
Exactly.
I mean, North Carolina has a lot going on. Well, first of all, there's nothing better than being part of a state or coming to a state that is enjoying an economic renaissance the way North Carolina is. And Colorado has had much of that same type of economic renaissance. And there are some similar public policies that actually come into play for both states. But why North Carolina specifically and why John Locke Foundation? Well, again, who wouldn't want to be here? But I get to be a part of an organization that for the last 30 years and going into its fourth decade, as you mentioned, for the last 30 years has been laying a foundation of public policy that when you had the right or courageous elected officials who have looked at that and said, you know what, I think we're going to try some of those policies, actually put them into place, and now you see this economic renaissance that is going on in North Carolina with hundreds of thousands of jobs created. You flattened, the state has flattened out its income tax structure. You have, this is a state whose state legislature, think about this. You have elected officials, and I shouldn't say you, it's we now. I get to call it we have state elected officials that have the foresight and the courage to spend to budget to rate of inflation plus population and then put the rest into reserve. That kind of fiscal responsibility takes courage, it takes leadership, and that's what North Carolina has shown. They've done it voluntarily. Now, in Colorado, we've also enjoyed, when I was there, we enjoyed economic success, but that's in part because the legislature was forced through a taxpayer's bill of rights to budget to rate of inflation plus population. So in other words, Coloradans keep more of their money. North Carolinians keep more of their money. What do they do with it? They invest it. They start new businesses. They generate wealth. You see the same thing. But in North Carolina, your legislature, our legislature did it voluntarily. They understand the importance of it. So who wouldn't want to be part of this? And I get to lead the Locke Foundation and this incredibly talented staff into its fourth decade of that kind of work.
You know, it's so interesting to hear you talk about it because here in North Carolina, we know what's occurred over the past several years, and you laid it out perfectly. People are keeping more of what they earn. There's more job opportunity. Everybody wants to come here. And we always say, look, we've become a model for other states, but to hear you coming from Colorado, that's really true. People are looking at us here and saying, how did you do it? What was the recipe? And of course, here at the John Locke Foundation, we have been laying out those policies and recommendations for years. And over the past half decade or so, we've really seen a lot of progress with lawmakers actually picking up on a lot of that. One thing that's so important that comes out of this, I'd really love to hear your thoughts on this, is what happens to the next generation? Because now you're talking about the ability, for example, for parents to build wealth, pass it on to their kids and give them a head start.
Well, so great, great question. And that's where our work here at the Locke Foundation is even more important. Because what we have to continue to do, you lay that foundation. Now we have to continue that educational piece of telling people, letting the state know, here's how this wealth was created and here's why it was created. And pass it on to the next generation. So North Carolina now, you poised to offer even more opportunity for the next generation. You have, there's the research triangle. Colorado is going to try and challenge North Carolina on this, but the whole, you know, craft beer industry.
Oh, it's big here. It is big here. Colorado will not win, trust me.
Well, and so I'm, and now that I'm a North Carolinian, I'll throw down the gauntlet. But just having that industry alone, one, attracting young people, but also it is, that is a, it's almost like a microcosm. You think about it, it used to just be these big, huge conglomerates. Now, anybody, small business owners starting up craft industries, it's craft beer. Now, what is the next craft? Whatever that is. But if our state legislature, if our elected officials continue with this kind of leadership where people keep more of their own money, they are fiscally responsible, and roll back regulations so that it's friendly to businesses. The sky is the limit for North Carolina. We're going to be a case study for every single other state.
That's new John Locke Foundation CEO Amy Cook speaking with Donna Martinez. Watch the full interview at CarolinaJournal.com under the video tab. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
Tired of fake news? Tired of reporters with political axes to grind? Well, you need to be reading Carolina Journal. Honest, uncompromising, old-school journalism you expect and you need. Even better, the monthly Carolina Journal is free to subscribers. Sign up at CarolinaJournal.com. You'll receive Carolina Journal newspaper in your mailbox each month. Investigations into government spending, revelations about boondoggles, who the powerful leaders are and what they're doing in your name and with your money. We shine the light on it all with the stories and angles other outlets barely cover. But there's a bonus. Our print newspaper is published monthly, but our daily news site gives you the latest news each and every day. Log on to CarolinaJournal.com once, twice, even three times a day. You won't be disappointed. It's fresh news. And if you'd like a heads up on the daily news, sign up for our daily email. Do that at CarolinaJournal.com. Carolina Journal, rigorous, unrelenting, old school journalism. We hold government accountable for you.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. 2020 is shaping up to be a major election year. What are the races to watch? The top issues? Which voters could decide the tight races? Joining us to help answer those questions is a longtime observer of Tar Heel politics. John Hood is an author, syndicated columnist, and chairman of the John Locke Foundation. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Mitch.
So 2020 is going to be a huge year or a huge year for Tar Heel politics. What are you going to be paying most attention to?
Possibly the number of times political, so-called political experts use the term hindsight is 2020. I think that's going to be the most, one of the most pervasive phenomena in North Carolina politics, because foresight is going to be very far away from 2020. We saw in 2016 surprises in North Carolina electoral outcomes. We saw them in 2018. It is very possible we'll see something like that again in 2020. Just remember the context. In 2016, we had a U.S. Senator reelected, Republican Richard Burr. We had the Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump win by a couple of 3 points. And we had Pat McCrory, the incumbent Republican governor, lose. But we had other Republican statewide elected officials do well, sometimes better than the candidates I just mentioned. What does that mean? That means, number one, there are some voters who only vote for president, or maybe president and senator, but they don't go all the way down the ballot. But that's not enough to explain it. It also means, and pardon me if you think this sounds like, you know, Bigfoot hunting or something, but there are voters out there, possibly off in remote mountains or in sort of mysterious bogs somewhere in eastern North Carolina, who vote Democrat for some races and Republican for other races. There used to be a lot more of those kinds of split ticket voters. There aren't as many. But when you have an equally divided state like North Carolina, which is one of the closest divided states as far as partisan affiliation in the country, then you're going to have a small but decisive number of ticket splitters, people who voted for, let's say, Roy Cooper and Donald Trump. There are such people. There were also people who voted for Hillary Clinton and Pat McCrory. I suspect there'll be enough of those ticket splitters in 2020 to generate a mixture of outcomes rather than a clean sweep for one side or the other. But I guess we'll see. Hindsight is 2020.
We'll get back to the ticket splitters in just a bit, but with all of the elections on the ballot, there's president, governor, a U.S. Senate seat, control of the General Assembly through all of those 170 legislative races, major court races on the ballot. What are going to be the one or two that you really focus most attention on?
Well, it's hard to ignore the top three races on the ballot. The presidential race is critical. Democrats hope to defeat Donald Trump. It wouldn't guarantee that outcome if they won North Carolina, but it would certainly make it very difficult for Donald Trump to be reelected without North Carolina. There's some other seats, other states, I should say, that Donald Trump needs that are harder gets than North Carolina, places like the battleground states of the Great Lakes region. If he's struggling to get North Carolina, he's probably not going to be president. The second thing, it's kind of a similar point, is the U.S. Senate race with Tom Tillis running for reelection. His Democratic opponents will either be Cal Cunningham, the former state senator, or Erica Smith, the current state senator. The Republicans currently have 53 seats in the U.S. Senate. If they win the presidency and thus keep the vice presidency, then they only need 50 seats to really control the chamber. If the Democrats win the White House, the Republicans would need 4 seats. They would need to not lose 4 seats, because if they went down to 49, obviously they'd no longer be a majority. Well, it's pretty easy to see if the Democrats are going to do well and really threaten Republican control of the United States Senate, it's easy to see 3 places where Republican incumbents would be in trouble: Maine, Colorado, and Arizona. These are places that wouldn't require very much interesting to happen, because those states have been trending blue much more than North Carolina has. You could see that happen. But that fourth seat for the Democrats is probably North Carolina. So the Tom Tillis race could be the tipping point in control of the U.S. Senate. That's number 2. Now, for North Carolinians, arguably the most important race is not the presidency or the Senate. Maybe I'm biased because I tend to focus on state policy, but I think the most consequential race for North Carolinians is the governor's race. We have a relatively weak governor in institutional power in North Carolina. It doesn't mean we have a weak governor. The governor still matters a great deal. Roy Cooper is running for reelection. His likely opponent is the Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. This is a matchup people have been expecting for years. And absent a long-shot successful primary challenge to Dan Forrest by Holly Grange, a state representative, it'll be a Forrest-Cooper race. A Forrest-Cooper race in many ways typifies North Carolina politics. Both have been elected statewide multiple times. Both are talented in their own way. I suspect a tremendous amount of money will be spent on both sides. I think those are the key races to watch, but I also wouldn't be shocked if we even had a competitive congressional race or two.
We are chatting with John Hood, who is chairman of the John Locke Foundation, also a longtime observer of North Carolina politics. Earlier, you mentioned the importance of the ticket splitters, who could really make a difference. As you see Tar Heel politics and the way these particular races play out, what kinds of folks do you see as the potential ticket splitters?
Well, I won't be too oversimplified, but if you think about two different kinds of ticket splitters in North Carolina, let's say a Trump-Cooper voter in the rural area and a Clinton-McCrory voter in the urban area, in a Mecklenburg County, let's say. Let's say the other ticket splitter would be in Mitchell County out in the mountains. Those ticket splitters who might vote for Roy Cooper and for Donald Trump again in 2020 might be people who were generally conservative. They feel more akin to the Republican than the Democratic Party, certainly at the national level. They at least dislike Trump's enemies, or they like Trump, or both. But with a Democrat in the governor's race, that doesn't scare them. They sort of feel like that Roy Cooper might be good on education or something like that. In the urban area, though, you might see a suburban-type voter in the suburbs of Raleigh, Cary, Charlotte, Greensboro, who doesn't like Donald Trump and isn't going to vote for him for president. But when you go down the ballot a little bit, they get nervous about tax increases that Democrats might institute. Certainly, Roy Cooper has said things that would suggest he might want taxes to be bigger. They might like other policies that Republicans in the legislature have generally been following and are nervous about Roy Cooper's constant battles with the Republicans. And you could see a suburban voter vote for the Republicans in state races like governor or state senate or state house or something like that, but vote for whoever the Democratic nominee for president is. These are examples of the kinds of ticket splitters. Again, not very many, only a few percentage points of the North Carolina electorate, but enough to matter in a tight state.
With Donald Trump playing such a large role in national politics, how much are any of these candidates for any other races going to be able to get their message out with people paying attention to for or against Trump?
Well, if we're talking about broadcast ads bought in bulk, probably not very much, because I suspect the presidential races and the Senate races and to some extent the governor's races will buy all that time. But if you're running for some other council state race, or you're a voter who wants to find out about the legislative races, the congressional races, county commission races, I actually think you will get a lot of messaging. It just won't come in that form. It will come in your mailbox. in an interesting way, the internet age and the data revolution in politics has reinforced the value of old-fashioned direct mail, email, Facebook ads, other kinds of digital messaging, even texting to your phones.
Well, one person who is certainly going to be paying attention as this moves forward is John Hood, chairman of the John Locke Foundation. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll have more on Carolina Journal Radio in just a moment.
If you love freedom, we've got great news to share with you. Now you can find the latest news, views, and research from conservative groups across North Carolina all in one place, NorthCarolinaConservative.com. It's one-stop shopping for North Carolina's freedom movement. At NorthCarolinaConservative.com, you'll find links to John Locke Foundation blogs on the day's news, CarolinaJournal.com reporting and quick takes, Carolina Journal radio interviews, TV interviews featuring CJ reporters and Locke Foundation analysts, opinion pieces and reports on higher education from the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal, commentary and polling data from the Civitas Institute, and news and views from the North Carolina Family Policy Council. That's right, all in one place, NorthCarolinaConservative.com. That's North Carolina spelled out, conservative.com. NorthCarolinaConservative.com. Try it today.
North Carolina is changing, not just day to day, but hour to hour, minute to minute, even second to second. How can you keep up with the changes, especially the ones that affect you, your family, your home, your job? Make the John Locke Foundation and Carolina Journal part of your social media diet. On Facebook, like the John Locke Foundation, like Carolina Journal. Follow us on Twitter, at John Locke NC and at Carolina Journal. News, insights, and analysis you'll find nowhere else. Thanks to the experts at the John Locke Foundation, and thanks to the first-class investigative reporting of Carolina Journal. Don't wait for the morning newspaper. Don't wait for the evening news. If it's happening now, it's happening here. The John Locke Foundation and Carolina Journal have you covered with up-to-the-second information. Like us on Facebook, the John Locke Foundation, and Carolina Journal. Follow us on Twitter, at John Locke NC and at Carolina Journal.
Who knew you could shop and invest in freedom at the same time? It is true. Online shopping is now a great way to support the John Locke Foundation. Just shop using the Amazon Smile program and designate the John Locke Foundation to receive a portion of your purchase amount. That's right. You shop. Amazon donates money to us, the John Locke Foundation. Here's how. Log on to smile.amazon.com. Amazon Smile is the same Amazon you know. Same products, same prices. But here's what's better. Amazon donates 0.5% of the price of your eligible Amazon Smile purchases to the John Locke Foundation. So try it. Be sure to designate us as the nonprofit you want to support. It's that easy. So now, not only will you enjoy what you buy, you'll also support freedom. Don't forget, log on to smile.amazon.com today. Buy something nice and help defend freedom. Help support the John Locke Foundation.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. Congressional Democrats recently took aim at U.S. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. In a committee meeting, they criticized her department's approach to issues linked to college student debt. Republican Congresswoman Virginia Fox of North Carolina offered a different perspective.
I'd like to make one thing abundantly clear. Above all else, committee Republicans support smart, focused, and constructive oversight. Members of Congress have an important responsibility to protect every single tax dollar. Everyone in this room knows how seriously we take that responsibility. Strong and effective oversight can strengthen the integrity of our institutions, including the Department of Education. Ensuring the federal government is efficient and accountable should be a top priority for all members of Congress. Sadly, this committee is missing an opportunity to address serious oversight issues. We could investigate the widespread and brazen lawmaking by the United Auto Worker Union leaders who betrayed hardworking Americans in favor of self-enrichment. We know the UAW's senior union leaders engaged in money laundering, tax fraud, bribery, and embezzlement, but this committee has taken no action. We could investigate the potential fraud within Head Start. A recent report from the Nonpartisan Government Accountability Office, GAO, indicated there was income fabrication and doctored applications to impact an individual's eligibility. We could investigate how potentially tens of thousands of people may be committing student loan fraud, as a GAO report found borrowers may have understated their income or overstated their family size to reduce their student loan payments. There are real opportunities to work together to address these serious issues that require honest oversight. Instead, committee Democrats will choose to use their time today attacking Secretary DeVos for delays in responses to oversight requests she's responding to. Let me remind everyone here today that the process to produce the oversight documents requested by any member of Congress, including the committee chairman, requires reviews across multiple offices within the agency. All of this takes time and is necessary to produce documents and answers that are actually responsive to members.
That's U.S. Representative Virginia Fox, Republican from North Carolina. She's defending U.S. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. She's also criticizing Democratic colleagues on the House Education and Labor Committee. Fox thinks they should focus on different issues. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
We're doubling down on freedom. At Carolina Journal Radio, we're proud to bring you stories that impact your life and your wallet. And now, get twice as much freedom when you also listen to our podcast, Headlock, available on iTunes and at johnlock.org/podcast. Now, Headlock is a little bit different. It's a no-holds-barred discussion that challenges soft-headed ideas from the left and the right. But like Carolina Journal Radio, Headlock is smart and timely. But with Headlock, you'll hear more about the culture wars, and you'll get some more humor as well. We guarantee great information and a good time. Double down with us, listen to Carolina Journal Radio each week, and listen to Headlock, too. Remember, you can listen to Headlock at johnlock.org/podcast, or subscribe or download each week at iTunes. Carolina Journal Radio and Headlock, just what you need to stay informed and stay entertained. Both brought to you in the name of freedom by the John Locke Foundation.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. You might have heard of the Game of Thrones. You probably have not heard of the Game of Verms. But that's the name New York University political scientist Bruce Bueno de Mesquita assigns to an important period of European history. He discussed the game during a recent lecture at Duke.
I'm interested in the relationship between the secularization of Europe and Europe's economic development, and how those two things were the strategic consequences of the relationship between the Catholic Church and politics in the guise of the interests of the Holy Roman Emperor and a bunch of kings.
Bueno de Mesquita focuses on the impact of the Concordat of Worms. Reached in 1122, it was a compromise of a long-running religious dispute.
What did Worms do in a nutshell? Worms increased the bargaining power of secular rulers, especially kings, in wealthy dioceses, right? The Catholic Church is divided up into dioceses. So in wealthy dioceses, kings gained bargaining leverage. In poor dioceses, the Pope or the Church gained leverage. And a consequence of that was a wedge was created between the interests of the Church in economic development and prosperity and the interests of secular rulers. Secular rulers became motivated to make more of their territory prosperous, and the Church became motivated to limit that prosperity or even reduce it.
The Concordat of Worms had major long-term impacts on European history.
The Concordat created an economic linkage or a linkage between the rise of secular politics in Europe and the rise of economic development, something which surprisingly, as far as I know, no historian has observed, nor has anybody studying the political economy of this period. The standard accounts, which look at things like the Protestant Reformation and so forth, we will see are all strategic consequences of the Concordat. So Worms created the conditions under which Northern Europe, which was poorer than Southern Europe at the time, becomes much richer, and Southern Europe fails to become richer, creating what is now the modern division between Northern, mostly Protestant Europe, which is more prosperous than today's mostly Catholic Southern Europe.
New York University political scientist Bruce Bueno de Mesquita says the conditions arising from the Concordat of Worms had other implications. He referenced impacts in England more than a century later.
In 1297, Edward I in England is fighting a war against Philip the Fair in France. Fair as in handsome, definitely not fair as in a good guy. They're fighting in Gascony itself. Interesting story what the fight was about. But anyway, Edward has knights in the field in Gascony and no money. They need to eat. Their horses need to eat. They need to be sheltered. They need arms. He has no money. So he goes to the lords and he says, you all owe fealty to me. I have this war going on. You have to give me money. And they say no. This is not a war of necessity. It is a war of choice. We are not obligated to defend you in a war of choice. It's your choice. You want to fight this war? It's not to our benefit. Good luck to you. So he turns to the church, and he levies a heavy tax on the clergy. And Pope Boniface VIII, Boniface VIII, issues a bull, Clericis Laicos, or Clericis Laicos, that says that any clergy who pays taxes to the king is automatically excommunicated. I'm going to guess that the clergy were particularly likely to believe the religion, so this was a very costly thing to them. They're not paying. Edward is desperate. He's got an army in the field. He turns to the wool merchants, big export business in England at the time, and he increases the tax on wool 300 or 400%. And the wool merchants put their wool in there, you know, bundle it up and say, not paying. We're not going to pay. And so Edward, because he needs the money to expand his empire, issues Confirmatio Cartarum, goes much farther than Magna Carta. It says, from this day forward, no king of England, notice how he is now presuming that he is speaking for the country England and its government, not just for himself. No king of England ever again will levy a new tax without the approval of the lords and the commons. It is the beginning of Parliament.
France felt an impact at the same time.
Meanwhile, Philip the Fair in France, besides fighting his war with Edward, is also fighting a war with Boniface VIII. Because Boniface has issued a second bull, 1302, called Unum Sanctum. Unum Sanctum, so 1 Corinthians 2:15 says that no man can judge the church, and the church judgeth all. Unum Sanctum goes further. It says, essentially, even the lowest level clergy can depose anybody secular. Low clergy answer, so priests answer to bishops, bishops answer to archbishops, archbishops answer to the Pope answers only to God, because the Pope, of course, is God's choice. But any king can be deposed by the church. Philip is not keen on this, combined with the deprivation of money because he can't tax the clergy. So he calls the first ever Estates General, made up of the French nobles, the French clergy, and the French commoners, or representatives of the commoners. And so it's a weaker concession than in Confirmatio Cartarum, but he's creating the beginnings of some representative government. He appoints only merit-based bureaucrats to help advance his agenda, and he declares war, a holy war, on the Pope. He also invokes the term Duce et decorum est pro patria mori. It is sweet and proper to die for one's country. Telling Frenchmen that you should go and fight the Pope, this evil guy, not as a Gascon, not as a Breton, not as a Burgundy person or a Norman, but as a Frenchman. And they do.
What's the outcome of all these changes?
What is today Protestant Europe takes off 100 years before Martin Luther, and gets into this space where they could break with the church. So now it's only a question of having somebody with the right idea. The logic of the theory tells us that they should be stimulating growth and secularism, and both of those we see the evidence is showing us is happening. So thanks to Worms, the incentive to advance the interests of kings is strengthened in wealthy places, so it becomes more secular. That means that kings have an incentive to make more of their dioceses wealthy, so they have more political power. And so they do. The church, meanwhile, is trying to limit economic growth. We get a more secular world. We get a wealthier Northern Europe compared to Southern Europe.
And all of this happened before the Protestant Reformation sparked by Martin Luther. That's Bruce Bueno de Mesquita, New York University political scientist, speaking recently at Duke University. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
Real influence. You either have it or you don't. And at the John Locke Foundation, we have it. You'll find our guiding principles in many of the Freedom Forward reforms of the past decade here in North Carolina. So while others talk or complain or name call, we provide research, solutions, and hope. Our team analyzes the pressing issues of the day, jobs, healthcare, education, and more. We look for effective ways to give you more freedom, more options, more control over your life. Our goal is to transform North Carolina into a growing, thriving economic powerhouse, the envy of every other state. Our research has helped policymakers make decisions that ensure you keep more of what you earn, expand your choice of schools for your kids, widen your job opportunities, improve your access to doctors. The recipe for stability and a bright future. For truth, for freedom, for the future of North Carolina. We are the John Locke Foundation.
Earlier in the program, you heard the first part of a conversation between Donna Martinez and Amy Cook, the new CEO of the John Locke Foundation. Here's the rest of that chat, starting with Amy's take on growth in the craft beer industry.
That craft beer industry is a prime example that when you allow people to innovate and you unleash an entrepreneurial spirit, look at where North Carolina is right now. And that really is a testament to the research of the Locke Foundation and then the leadership at the state level. I mean, that's really where that comes from.
Now, as the new CEO of the John Locke Foundation, not only will you be leading the team in terms of public policy and working with the legislature, but we certainly have a big journalism division here. Carolina Journal, the flagship publication, monthly print publication, daily online news site, and we have a whole team of writers there. You now become the publisher of Carolina Journal, and you have a bit of experience yourself being a writer and an author, and also in Colorado, there was some journalism work that has gone on there at your former job.
Right. Well, actually, it's kind of a heady title for somebody like me who I actually have a journalism degree. I got it at the University of Missouri, Columbia, a very good journalism school. It's in magazine journalism, so in long form journalism. But also, you're right, as an author, I've written everything from a master's thesis all the way down to, you know, white papers, issue backgrounders.
I bet letters to the editor.
A handful. And opinion pieces, blog posts, you name it. I've also said those of us who are not, I'm a better editor than I am a writer. I've often said I always like the editing side, but
we need more editors, believe me,
right.
Everywhere.
but here's the thing with that. As we're seeing a change in the business model when it comes to journalism, where I came from at the Independence Institute, rather than constantly having to fight to get our information into traditional media, we just decided to go out and create our own, which is much like what John Locke did with the Carolina Journal. So, you know, we don't whine about somebody not picking us, picking up a story. We just decided we would go out and create our own news media. And this Complete Colorado, and this gets to the point of it. It's not enough to just have that outlet, but you actually you have to staff it well, maintain it. It has to be exceptional quality because you are new, right? And although Carolina Journal has been around a very long time, but it has to be exceptional quality. And I have a history of doing that at when I was in Colorado, Complete Colorado, for what they called a startup. We didn't even have a print piece, but over 2 million unique views in 2019, which was our goal. So, the importance of having additional voices as what we would call traditional mainstream media struggles sort of to find its place and struggles with its business model. Having the Carolina Journal, I couldn't be more honored than to be the publisher of such an exceptional, news outlet and all the talented staff. Expect more and better, even better.
So as publisher of Carolina Journal, as chief executive officer of the John Locke Foundation, you have your plate full, obviously, and learning much, much more about the state and how we can help to defend and advance liberty for sure. But also, you are a fun person. I mean, it's very clear. Our listeners can hear. You know, you are an outgoing person and you have a lot of interest. Tell us a little bit more about Amy Cook.
Thank you for asking. So I am an unapologetic free market capitalist, and I love to spread the word of freedom. And I'm just real quick, I'll say this. I'm actually probably I'm like your friend who just quit smoking. and they might be annoying. I am a converted capitalist, grew up in a very left of center household. So I always say I'm the worst kind. I'm the kind that, I'm the evangelist for it. But I also, other interests, I'm wildly competitive. I'll compete in darn near anything. If somebody brings in tiddlywinks or card throwing, I'll be the one right there trying to, in the fight. My passion is sports. Because I love the competition. I'm also a cyclist. I'm a hobby cyclist, so please don't put me on the Tour de France. But you may find me out in Asheville or out in the mountains, trying to navigate up some climbs there. I'll probably go take my bike over to the coast and suffer through the heat and the humidity and the wind and everything else to ride there. So if you see somebody out, I know there aren't a ton of road cyclists on the roads in Raleigh, but you might find me some of the outlying parts of the state. And that's a great way for me to go out and meet people and learn about new communities. Let me tell you, last story. I actually
and you're a storyteller too.
Yeah,
that's a good thing.
That's a radio. That was my radio. So I also did. I used to do radio. I dabbled in radio for 10 years. But I'm actually. I have family from North Carolina. People are saying, "Well, what do you have in North Carolina?" I said, "Well, believe it or not, my namesake, my great 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 grandmother." Was born in North Carolina.
Okay,
in
that's
1786. Right, so it took me. She left here, but it was anyway. She got married, and then her husband took her on an adventure. My great 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 grandfather took her on an adventure all the way to Missouri. So it's taken us about 200 years to get her name back to North Carolina. But coming back to North Carolina, and this is kind of funny. apparently I have a relative who was a lousy shot and died in a duel.
Oh.
Up near, is it Mush Island? Is there Halifax County, I think? Is there?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I have to go check records there. But that's...
So you've got history, but but now you are going to be telling your stories and your family's history on social media. And we have to talk, question here, about your social media, because your Twitter handle is a hoot. Tell us about that.
So, I do like to have a good time. Mm-hmm. And I like to, we take our mission very seriously. We don't take ourselves seriously. But my name is Amy Cook. My middle initial is O, so it's Amy O. Cook. If you do the initials, it's AOC. So I have said I want to make AOC great again. I want to make it a initials to be revered. So my Twitter handle, my new Twitter handle, for especially now that I'm in North Carolina, is at the right AOC. And as I said, about the only thing I share in common with the other AOC is we both used to be bartenders. So there's that. But I'm a little older, a little wiser, with far better ideas.
Well, I'll tell you what, after hearing this interview, I have a feeling you're going to have a lot more followers on Twitter at the right AOC. And of course, you can always follow the John Locke Foundation at John Locke NC and at Carolina Journal. Amy Cook, we are going to have a great time here in 2020.
Listen,
John,
we have the best jobs ever. So if we aren't having fun, there's something wrong with us. But we're going to have a great time. Donna, thank you so much.
You are very welcome. Such a delight to talk with you. Amy Cook, the new Chief Executive Officer of the John Locke Foundation and the new publisher of Carolina Journal.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you, Amy. That's all the time we have for the program this week. We hope you'll join us again next week for another edition of Carolina Journal Radio. Carolina Journal Radio is a program of the John Locke Foundation. To learn more about the John Locke Foundation, including donations that support programs like Carolina Journal Radio, send email to development@johnlocke.org or call 1-866-JLF-INFO. That's 1-866-553-4636.
Carolina Journal Radio is a co-production of the John Locke Foundation, North Carolina's free market think tank, and Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated. All opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of advertisers or the station. For more information about the show or other programs and services of the John Locke Foundation, visit johnlocke.org or call us toll-free at 866-JLF-INFO. We'd like to thank our wonderful radio affiliates across North Carolina and our sponsors. From all of us at Carolina Journal Radio, thank you for listening, and please join us again next week.